to the December 21st, 2017 edition of The Numbers Game. I'm your host, Charlie Kleinhexel. You can follow me on Twitter at Spider2YBanana. And joining me today, of course, is our analyst extraordinaire, Nick Giffen. You know him better as Rotodoc or at Rotodoc on Twitter. Nick, how are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. It's week 16 coming up. We've got 14 games complete for every team. I forgot about the bye week there. And, it's a lot of interesting things going on. I remember last week we talked about some teams that have a chance to make the playoffs, and the Baltimore Ravens look like they're in pretty good shape now. They have an easy schedule left, so I definitely think they're going to make the playoffs. It should be pretty hard for them with a couple easy games. Hard for them to miss the playoffs with a couple easy games left. As far as fantasy goes, it was a mixed bag for me. I made my my league final of my home league, which is my longest running home league. It's been going on for 20 years now, and it's like a 10-team home league. You know, way back in the day when 10-team was popular, it's pretty cool. It's my older brother's league, and he had a bunch of college friends that he started up with exactly 20 years ago. So this is the 20th season. And both he and I are the only two Giffens in the league. Of course, he and then his friends, and then they invited me. Well, the two Giffens are the two most profitable players in league history over those 20 seasons, me being number one, him being number two. The funny thing is we've never met in the finals. This year, me versus the brother for all the marbles in the finals, so that'll be exciting. Nice. FFPC did not go so great. Basically, my team was full of injuries. Rex Burkhead got injured. Antonio Brown, we know what happened with him. Keenan Allen left with a back injury, so bit of a disaster on the FFPC front, so I'm kind of out of contention for any major prizes, but still a very good season overall. What about you?
Yeah, kind of a mixed bag for me as well. I do about a dozen dynasty leagues, and I made it to week 15 in five of them, so that's pretty good, but I did not advance to the finals in very many of them, so that was disappointing. On the MFL front, MFL 10s, I'm doing pretty good on a percentage basis, you know, going to cash or take home some kind of prize and a goodly number of those. It's just always frustrating to look at my dashboard there and see that my highest scoring teams are in the double ups, not the winner-take-all format. But c'est la vie, I'll come out well ahead in those, and that's always good news. We've got a great show for you guys today in the spirit of holiday festivities. We're going to bring you the 12 stats of Christmas. So basically 12 interesting stats that we think might be interesting just for your general consumption, or might help be useful for forecasting the future. And so we're going to dive right into that with Nick leading off the way. So this would be the 12 drummers drumming stat. What do you got for us, Nick?
Yeah, so our 12 drummers drumming, I'm gonna stick with the number theme here. Number 12 is Jarvis Landry is the number 12 player in PPR leagues, flex player in PPR leagues through 15 weeks of the regular season. So 14 games, 15 weeks. He is currently the PPR 12 overall for flex, so running back, wide receiver, and tight end. I think that's pretty crazy. I know most of us probably didn't have Jarvis Landry as a top 12 flex player at this point in the season in terms of overall points. You look at his ADP from earlier this year, you know, it definitely wasn't inside the top 12. I just pulled up really quickly the MFL 10 ADP, and he wasn't even in the top 32 picks there just based off of the default settings they have. If I expand it to 64, he finally pops up in there. So Jarvis Landry, a pretty interesting surprise there overall at number 12. What do you think of that?
That is pretty interesting, Nick. I've always been a fan of Jarvis Landry, but I didn't expect him to be that high. Before we get into the 11 Pipers piping stat, I'd like to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the RotoViz podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all our premium NFL content, and it also supports the pod. So one of the cool things about this exercise, Nick, I think as we've kind of approached our stats for Christmas a little bit differently, so I'm going to start off with the team one, and I'm going to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Jaguars defense the defense has contributed 154.7 expected points to the Jaguars team this season. That's a really high number of expected points, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners know what the concept of expected points is. The only other team this season that's even above 100 expected points from the defense is Baltimore, and their defense has kicked in 102.5 expected points. So that's over 50 points more than the second place defense. The next team after that is Denver, and their defense has only contributed 63 expected points to their season total. So that's less than half of what Jacksonville's defense. The Jags are allowing their opponents to score on less than 22% of their drives, or I should say fewer than 20% of their drives, which is incredible. And they also have allowed a league-low 124 first downs by pass. The next best team is the Broncos. They've given up 140 passing first downs. Quarterbacks that face the Jaguars are averaging 4.6 net yards per attempt. That's a yard, almost a yard less than the next best defense, which is Minnesota at 5.5. This is a really, really good defense, and I think everybody knows that, but when you put numbers to it, when they're 50 points better and double the third place defense in terms of expected points, I found that to be pretty eye-opening. Let's kick it back over to you, Nick. What do you have for number 10, Lords of Leaping?
Yeah, well, first I just wanted to chime in on that Jaguars point. I think that's super cool because, as you know, I've been a guy who's been all over the Jaguars for the Super Bowl. I really do think they're going to be in the Super Bowl this year, at least have a very good chance. And, I mean, that is mind-blowing. I mean, 150-something expected points from the defense, and then you mentioned Baltimore, just over 100. If we look at the Pythagorean wins for Jacksonville, I posted this to Twitter a couple hours ago before we went on air. Currently, the Jaguars, they have 374 points for on offense. You know, or I should say they've scored 374 points. They've given up 209. So that is a difference of 165 points. And if you use the Pythagorean Pat version of Pythagorean expectation, the Jaguars actually have the highest Pythagorean win percentage in the NFL. It would be over the course of 16 games, if you scale that to a 16-game season, they're a 13.5 win team. Wow. That would put them as number one in the NFL right now. So just based off points for and points against, and of course a large part of this being the defense, Jaguars definitely the best team in the NFL. And yeah, so my number 10 here, this is an interesting one for the 10 Lords of Leaping. It's kind of playing off of the number 12 there that I had with Jarvis Landry. And the thing about Jarvis Landry being a top 12 currently flex player is just the amount of volume he's getting. And, he's third in the NFL right now in targets. And so, behind only a couple other people that I'll be talking about later. But the idea of volume here is leads into my number 10 stat. This year, only 10 players at this point in the season, so again, we've completed 15 weeks, 14 games, only 10 players right now have 120 or more targets. And the reason that's significant is because this points to something that Ben Gretsch has talked a lot about at RotoViz and forecasting the future. If we go back just kind of in this passing era, let's say 2013 is when Sean Siegel penned his zero RB piece there at RotoViz in November of 2013, there were 17 players by this point in the season that had at least 120 targets. That was 2013. So it went 17, then 2014 was 15, then 15, then 14 last year, and now 10. So we're definitely on a decline year over year over year. And the reason I bring up Ben is because he's talked about forecasting forward. Well, this seems to be a declining trend that the ball is being spread around more by quarterbacks. And just overall, the total passing volume hasn't really been increasing. It's just been kind of stagnant over the past couple of years. And now we're seeing that it's getting spread around more and more and more. So these super elite wide receivers are almost going to become like these super elite running backs in that I think there will be such a gap between those guys. You talk about Antonio Brown. There's such a huge gap right now between Antonio Brown and basically the rest of the wide receivers, just like there is with, for example, Le'Veon Bell and the rest of the running backs, or maybe Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley, that I think it'll change the way we do fantasy drafts going forward.
Yeah, I'm excited to explore that in the offseason, but that's a great stat. You can almost visualize the trend line there heading down. So I'm up next with Nine Ladies Dancing. So what better time than that to mention the Cleveland Browns? The Browns, unlike the Jaguars, are not a good team. 21% of the Browns' offensive drives have ended in a turnover. So if you think about that, one out of every five times the Browns have the ball, it's a turnover. That's about 6% higher than both the Dolphins and the Broncos, who are the next two teams in that list of percent of offensive drives ending in turnover. So they're well in the lead, or well behind, depending on how you look at it there. Since 2013, only one other team, and that was the Giants in 2013, has finished a season with more than 20% of their drives ending in a turnover. So we're looking at, I won't say historical, but at least in recent memory, an epically bad offense in Cleveland. So condolences to you and yours if you are a fan of the orange and brown.
Nick? Yeah, that's rough. I just wanted to follow up on that. Cleveland right now, so you mentioned Jaguars with your first one. They're at 374 points scored and 209 points against. The Browns are basically the flip of that. They're 207 points for and 362 against. Wow. So it's almost literally the exact flip of the Jacksonville Jaguars in terms of points for and points against, since that puts Cleveland at basically a 2.6 win team on the season. Obviously, they can't finish with more than two wins, even if they win their last two games, which if they did, it would probably make them more like a three-win team in terms of points for and against. So they've still performed under expectation, but they've had a little bit of bad luck, but they've still just been just absolutely atrocious.
Well, you know what we have to do? We have to just combine the two teams, and then we'll have Jeff Fisher.
There you go. I like it. All right, I'm going to move on to the eight maids a milking. And I think this is a cool stat because, every offseason I do this quarterback prospect model, looking at which quarterbacks we think will have good seasons, and, kind of just gauging quarterback performance by a really simplified stat, and that is the adjusted yards per attempt. So if we look at the quarterbacks that have played at least seven games, just look at the quarterbacks that played seven games this year. So that does include Deshaun Watson, because he did play exactly seven games. But if we look at those quarterbacks that played at least seven games, we get eight quarterbacks. So fitting this number eight maids milking here, we have eight quarterbacks that have achieved an AYA of 8.0 or greater. So 8, 8, 8. We got the 8 theme going here. Those 8 quarterbacks are from lowest AYA to highest AYA. Matthew Stafford, exactly 8. Kirk Cousins. Jared Goff at 8.3. Drew Brees at 8.3. Carson Wentz at 8.3. Sean Watson at 8.4. Tom Brady, 8.5. And who do you think is number one? Do you have a guess?
Is it Goff?
Goff is at 8.3, sixth.
I didn't hear Breeze in there.
He was at 8.3 as well.
I didn't hear anything you said, apparently.
Yeah, apparently not. Pay attention. No. The number one quarterback this year in AYA, Alex freaking Smith, at 8.6 adjusted yards per attempt through 14 games so far this season. I mean, if you talk about late-round quarterback, I mean, there's a bunch of guys who weren't even drafted in the top 10 QBs. Matthew Stafford was outside the top 10. Kirk Cousins were right around the back part of the top 10. Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, Alex Smith. I mean, really the only ones that were securely inside the top 10 were Tom Brady and Drew Brees. So of those eight, really we can only say two of them were well inside the top 10 there. So that really goes to show the viability of late round quarterback. Even if we continue down the list, here's the next three quarterbacks: Case Keenum, Phillip Rivers, Jameis Winston, all also outside the top 12 in QB ADP. Before we get to another couple guys in there: Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers. So it definitely has been another successful year for late round quarterback.
That's nice. If only there was someone on Twitter who would lead the charge for that. That would be great. Been some fun times there lately. Before we finish up with the back half of the 12 stats of Christmas, I just wanted to let you guys know that if you wanted to pick one of those elite quarterbacks this week, you could do that using our new favorite fantasy app called Draft. Here's how it works. You do a draft. It lasts for just 1 week, and there's no management involved. You just set it and forget it. When you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waivers. draft takes care of last minute injuries and everything else like that for you. So the drafts are starting every couple of minutes. You could join one right now. And the best part, you get to play for cold hard cash. Drafts start from just a dollar, so there's one for every budget size. There's no salary caps. It's a real live snake draft, just like you do with your friends in a season-long league. So come and join me on Draft today. Download the app anytime. Just search Draft in your app store, and you can join a game in minutes. Or you can play from your computer on PlayDraft.com. For a limited time, new players get a free entry into a draft when they make their first deposit. But you have to use the promo code RVRadio. That's right, you can play a real money game for free using the promo code RVRadio with your first deposit on Draft. So once again, just search Draft in your app store or go to PlayDraft.com on your computer, and you can play free with the promo code RVRadio. All right, I'm up next with Seven Swans of Swimming, and I'm going to piggyback a little bit off what you had there, Nick, and I'm going to talk about the GOAT, Tom Brady. Tom Brady leads the NFL through this point in the season anyway, and passes completed, passing yards, and total offense. Since 1980, he's one of just four quarterbacks over the age of 40 to throw for more than 2,000 yards. In fact, he's already doubled that. The other ones on that list are Brett Favre, who did it twice, Warren Moon, and, of course, Vinny Testaverde. Favre's 2009 season is the best of those seasons. He finished with a 107.2 quarterback rating in that year. Brady's not far off that, though, with a 104 rating with two games to play. But even that accomplishment, leading the NFL in completions and yards and total offense and 104 QB rating, he's still not the best this season by QB rating. That honor goes to the aforementioned Alex Smith, who is sitting on a 105.4 quarterback rating for the season, which is pretty phenomenal and not what I expected when I started looking into these things. What do you have up for number six, Nick?
Yeah, well, man, I mean, first of all, it goes to show what kind of a career Tom Brady has had, but we're going to go from the GOAT to quite possibly the WOAT here. And so my stat for six, I need to look up what that is in the song. Six Geese A-Laying, I think it is.
That's right.
Yeah, so you were, what, Swans A-Swimming, Six Geese A-Laying.
That's right.
Yeah, I have a guy who's been laying a lot of geese eggs, or at least in the receptions column, but... yeah, so unfortunately, one of the Rotoviz favorites, Amari Cooper, there's only six players, so continuing on this numbered theme here, there's only six players with a worse yards per target over expectation than Amari Cooper this year among 108 qualified players. So only six worse, and those six are going from bad to extremely, extremely bad, the worst. After Amari Cooper, it's Eli Rogers, Cole Beasley, Chris Moore, Kamar Aiken, Zay Jones, and Breshad Perriman brings up the rear there in yards per target. And I shouldn't say over expectation, but this is really under expectation. But Amari Cooper, with only six players worse than him among qualified, and the way I determined qualified was you had to play at least six games and average at least three targets per game. 108 qualified players, Amari Cooper, seventh worst, sixth worse than him with minus 0.33 yards over expectation. So essentially a third of a yard under expectation per target for Amari Cooper. That's not very good. And he's down there with some pretty dreadful names. Eli Rogers. Not that these guys are like completely terrible. Obviously they play in the NFL, but they really have no fantasy impact. And Amari Cooper has also had no fantasy impact for the most part. So it's been a rough year for him. A lot of drops, and you know, he might be the WOAT pick of the whole draft, aside from the guys getting injured like David Johnson.
Yeah, definitely an underwhelming campaign. I'm hoping it makes him a bit of a buy low player in the off season or in drafts next year. But I think you might have a mistake there. There's no way Zay Jones can be that bad. Because we like Zay Jones, so he must be better.
Right? Oh, I wish. He was historically awful for the first part of the year. He finally had a breakout game or two, but not enough to make up for that really dreadful start to the season.
That's a good one, or a bad one, as the case may be, for Amari Cooper. I'm going to talk about something totally unexpected for number five, Golden Rings, and I'm going to talk about Keelan Cole. So I don't think anybody really had great expectations for him this year. He is currently leading the NFL in yards per reception with a pretty hefty 19 yards per reception. So since the year 2000, only 18 players have accomplished that feat in a season where they had more than 60 targets. So if you set the baseline at 60 targets, only 18 players have had a season with a 19-yard per reception average or higher, and Cole is one of those. So that's pretty good. It sounds a little better when you look at some of the other names on the list. So DeSean Jackson is on that list twice. Mike Wallace is on that list twice. Torrey Smith, Torrey Holt, Joey Galloway, Vincent Gordon, Josh Gordon, excuse me, Vincent Jackson and Josh Gordon, and future Hall of Famer Kenny Britt is also on that list. So those are the guys that have hit that 19 yards or higher per reception amount on a pretty decent target load. Got some pretty good company for Cole, and so I kind of like him going forward a little bit, depending on how Jacksonville handles their wide receiver core this offseason. But the really incredible thing in there for me was Josh Gordon. He had over 19 yards per reception, but he had 159 targets that year when he did that. So that's it's not like a fluke. That was pretty incredible. So let me kick it back to you now, Nick, for number four, calling birds.
Yeah, so for calling birds, first I just want to say that's pretty cool for Keelan Cole, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that holds up going forward. You mentioned some interesting names like DeSean Jackson there. It'll really, what I think we want to look at going forward is what is his true yards per target. So essentially, if we had Danny Tecito on earlier in the offseason on Numbers Game, and he looks a lot at something called the stabilization point of these different metrics. So when does yards per target stabilize, for example? And so he uses something called true yards per target, which basically adjusts for sample size. So it'll be interesting to see where Keelan Cole falls in true yards per target. It kind of regresses us a little bit to our prior until we have enough data on him to where he reaches the stabilization point, where we know where he, you know, he kind of really will lie in true yards per target. But that's definitely an amazing stat there for him. For number four, for calling birds, I have a team stat here. And so, again, I'm going to go back to this Pythagorean expectation, the Pythagorean Pat formulation of it. And the reason I use Pythagorean Pat is because it's more accurate. It fits the data better than the regular Pythagorean formula. So the Pythagorean Pat version, there are four teams currently with a 75% or better Pythagorean win percentage in the NFL based off of course, their 14 games played so far. And 75% is significant because if you translate that over 16 games, that's at least 12 wins. So those four teams, you know the Jaguars are at the top. But going back from reverse order, number four is the New England Patriots. So right now they've only been the fourth best team in the NFL in terms of points scored, points against, etc. They are right at 12 wins. 12.03 would be their expectation through a 16-game season. So right now they're 11-3. They'll probably win at least one, if not both, of their remaining games. And that also should, I would think, help their Pythagorean win expectation, but you never know. But point is, they're fourth right now, and I think they're right up there as either the first or second in the betting market in terms of winning the Super Bowl. I wouldn't take that bet. So number three is the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked about them, of course, with Carson Wentz and how great they've been this year. Nick Foles picked up right where Wentz left off with a four-touchdown game against the New York Giants, the lowly New York Giants, and they are currently at 12.82 expected wins over a 16-game season. So about 0.8 of a win better than the New England Patriots. The number two team is not the New Orleans Saints, not the Minnesota Vikings, not the Pittsburgh Steelers, not the Panthers. It is the Los Angeles Rams with 13.01 Pythagorean wins over the course of a 16-game season, if you were kind of, again, prorate that out from 14 to 16 games. So they're 10-4 right now, so they'll come under expectation. Obviously, even if they win out, they'll go 12-4, and they have about 13 wins. So that could actually mean good things for them in the Super Bowl. Teams that have more expected wins than they actually won will tend to outperform what they did in the regular season. We saw this a couple years ago, several years ago, I guess, when the New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl. The year before, they were a mediocre team, but they had more Pythagorean wins than they had actual wins. So teams with more Pythagorean wins than actual wins tend to outperform, especially if it's more than one win above. So Los Angeles Rams, at best, can finish 12-4, and they're about a 13-win team. So we could expect them to make a surprise in the playoffs, but probably not as much a surprise as the number one team here, the Jacksonville Jaguars, at 13.5 expected wins, as we talked about earlier, 13.52. So more than a half a win better than the Los Angeles Rams. They're also currently 10-4 like the Rams are, but they have a massive point differential there, as we talked about earlier, 165-point differential over 14 games. They're outscoring their opponents by over 10 points per game, and they're doing so in low-scoring games. It's one thing. For a lot of you who are college basketball fans, we talk about tempo-adjusted statistics. If you know teams shoot the ball every 20 seconds instead of waiting out the whole 30-second shot clock, you're just going to be more points scored. So what you want to do is, how efficient are you on a points-per-possession basis? We could kind of talk about the same thing in the NFL. The Jaguars play lower-scoring games, so a 10-point margin in a game with fewer plays, fewer possessions, mean you outscored, you have a better margin per play than you do if it's 10 points in a many, many play game. So that's why it's even stronger for the Jaguars to be up 165 points in a game where they tend to play fewer plays per game than some other teams around them, like, for example, the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's why they're the strongest team currently in the NFL. And 13.5 Pythagorean wins. So those are your four teams that are your top four in terms of expectation heading into the last couple weeks of the regular season and the postseason.
That's good stuff. Like I said, I've been a big fan of what the Rams have done this year. Fun to watch, I think. You got to really enjoy it as a fan of the game. So I think I'm up next with three French hens. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about Antonio Brown. I don't need to convince anybody that he's a good player. He's got 101 catches this season, and his season's probably done, the regular season anyway. 101 catches so far. Only four other players have more than 90. So he's, as usual, out ahead of the pack. In fact, over the last five seasons, there are only six players that have more than 400 catches. So let's see if you can help me fill in the blanks here. So DeAndre Hopkins has 409. Julio Jones has 440. Larry Fitzgerald has 453. And Demaryius Thomas has 471. Who do you think the other person on that list is?
Oh, man. Over 400 catches since what year?
The last five seasons, so 2013.
Last five seasons. I almost want to say, like, Jarvis Landry, except I don't know if he's been around for 5 years, but let me think on this. It's definitely not Doug Baldwin. It's definitely not Dez Bryant. Not Mike Evans. No, I don't know. Not Julian Edelman. He's been injured this year.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who is it?
Golden Tate has 426 catches in the last 5 years. So that was surprising to me to see him on that list. Pretty incredible. But even more incredible than that, so the second place person in receptions over the last five seasons is Demaryius Thomas, 471. Antonio Brown is number one with 582 catches. So he's got 100 more catches than Demaryius Thomas, more than 100 more catches over the next closest receiver in the last 5 years. Four of those guys were first-round picks. Tate was a second-round pick. Brown was a sixth-rounder. So pretty impressive career and five-year span for him. Also a little bit surprised to see Golden Tate up there, at least in terms of number of catches among some pretty great players. What do you got for number two, Nick?
Yeah, well, number two, I'm going to kind of continue on this Antonio Brown theme. And this isn't about Antonio Brown, but he is involved in this number for sure. And so we got two. What is two? Two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. Yeah. So two turtle doves. There are two players right now that are at the wide receiver / tight end positions. We're not counting running backs here. We're not counting quarterbacks. Just wide receiver and tight end. For 2017, there are currently two players on pace for over 300 PPR points among wide receivers and tight ends. One of them, of course, is Antonio Brown. He's already achieved that with 308.3 points, so he doesn't even need to play in these last two games, which he probably won't given that injury that he just suffered. And the other is another guy we've talked about, you just mentioned, with over 400 receptions in the past 5 years. That is DeAndre Hopkins, 295.3 PPR points currently. So those are the only two players on pace for over 300. Your next would be Keenan Allen at 238.6, but that means he would have to score, you know, 31.4 over the next 2 weeks to 31.2 average, I should say, over the next 2 weeks. So 61.4 total to reach, you know, the threshold there of 300 PPR points. Don't think that's going to happen for most of these guys. You know, there's a really outside shot it could happen with another guy, but they'd need two monster weeks, and they definitely haven't been averaging that. So third is Keenan Allen, fourth Michael Thomas, fifth Jarvis Landry, sixth Thielen, seven Adams, Devontae Adams, eight Tyreek Hill, nine Larry Fitzgerald, and finally we get to our first tight end, Travis Kelce, in 10th. So we have two guys that are just heads and shoulders above everybody else, and like I said, this will probably, possibly, maybe change the way we view early round drafts. And if we kind of go back in the history of this again, last year Antonio Brown was the only one on pace, and Odell Beckham Jr. was right there borderline on pace. But before that, we already had three guys in 2015 that were over 300 at this point, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, and Antonio Brown. 2014, going back to that one, we had, I'm flipping over here, we had two guys that were already over and another three that were on pace. So again, we see this trend where things are spreading out at the top. There are not as many guys who are just completely dominant at the wide receiver slash tight end position right now. So, you know, it really could change the way we do fantasy drafts in the future with these elite players. Maybe there becomes more of a mix of, kind of like we saw this year in some ways, a mix of wide receivers and running backs. I know 2 years ago, obviously, there was the big shift to drafting wide receivers early. Several years before that, you know, most people were drafting running backs early. We're probably going to start to see a mix here, and it'll be interesting to see how things shake out going forward in ADP.
Very good stuff. All right, last one here, the number one stat, the partridge in a pear tree stat. I'm going to talk about Antonio Brown's teammate, Le'Veon Bell, who's currently leading the NFL in yards from scrimmage. He's got 1,849 with a couple games to go. The only guy who's even close is Todd Gurley at 1,817. After that, the drop to the next guy, Kareem Hunt, is 1,641. So the third place guy in yards from scrimmage is over 200 yards behind Bell, which is a pretty big number with a couple games to go yet. So he's literally head and shoulders above the field there in terms of yards from scrimmage. If you expand the time frame a little bit, this is Bell's fifth season, and remember, he's missed some time with injuries and suspensions and so forth. He's already got basically 7,900 yards from scrimmage. It's 7,899. So we'll say he's got 7,900 yards from scrimmage in the first 5 years of his career. He's still got a couple games to go. That makes him number 18 in the first 5 years of a career since 1970. So, you know, that's good. It's not maybe as amazing as you expected. But of all those players, and there are 26 on that list, 26 running backs have gone over 7,600 yards in the first 5 years of their careers. He's done it in the fewest number of games. He's done it in 61 games to get to 7,900 yards. The only other guys to do it in under 70 games, Terrell Davis, Clinton Portis, and Edgerrin James. So pretty cool stuff. Head and shoulders above the field in terms of putting up yardage in the NFL this season. Nick, any final thoughts on numbers game, the holidays, this season?
Well, I mean, this is really the last week for, you know, most people in terms of fantasy. Even if you're not in the Super Bowl, a lot of you are playing DFS, or, you know, you've got consolation games or other things like that. But One thing I think is really fun to do for week 17 is what my home league does. And so one of the other things we do in our home league is we have a prop bet every week, and the team that wins the prop bet, you know, maybe it's most bench points, they win $10. So we all pitch in $10 extra over our buy-in to fund a $10 prop bet every week. Well, week 17, what we do is we just do what's called a money week, and that's the team that scores the most points gets $50 for that week. So we allocate part of the prize pool there. So that's fun, something fun you can do for week 17. I know it gets a little crazy because of all the players sitting or different things like that. But if you want to have an extra week of fun in your fantasy season, do something like that, because what it encourages that last week is you really digging in, finding those good plays, having a little fun, and get a chance to make a few bucks. So if you have a home league, I recommend doing something like that for week 17. Just kind of something fun to do. But as far as week 16, I have my big, like I said, my big finals there versus my brother. I've got one entry into the DraftKings $1,500 buy-in Millionaire Maker tournament. Nice. I won that seat. So last year I won 5 seats, and I almost won the damn thing. If Chandler Catanzaro had missed that field goal in the last second of the game, it would have gone into overtime, and I basically stacked that Seattle-Arizona game. And it was a good sweat. I think I was in like third or fourth at some point, and then dropped down. I can't remember if it was ninth or 12th or something like that. But so hopefully I can do a repeat performance this year. But yeah, we'll see. So what do you got going on week 16 here, Charlie?
Not a whole lot different than that. I like the idea for week 17. I think any way you can make week 17 engaging or fun in your season long leagues is worth exploring. Just give people something to stay tuned in for. I got a couple of final matchups in my leagues, but mostly this is kind of my favorite part of the season because the fantasy work is mostly done, and now we can kind of enjoy the playoffs more as fans than writers or analysts. So it's a good time of year. We're glad you guys are along for the ride. That's going to do it for this edition of The Numbers Game. For Nick Giffen on Twitter, @RotoDoc. This is Charlie Kleinhexel, Spider2YBanana, and thanks for tuning in, everybody.